The exponents of the Upanishad tell us that the first and the second chapters lay down the thesis of the whole Upanishad. They declare the essential content of the whole scripture. While the third and the fourth chapters confirm this thesis by more elaborate discussions, which happens to be in the context of the court of King Janaka, where learned men, sages appeared to have conferred together for the purpose of mutual edification. The sage Yajnavalkya is the leading figure in this great assembly of King Janaka, and he is questioned by various sages. 8 of them are mentioned as principal ones, the first one being Ashvala, the chief priest of the sacrifices performed in the Yajnashala of King Janaka, who queries Yajnavalkya as to the way in which death can be overcome by those who are really subject to death, namely the performers of actions, the means of action, as well as the goal of action. All these are perishable in the world of space and time. Anything that you do has an end, just as you yourself will have an end one day or the other. If everything is to be destroyed, is there a way of escape from this destructibility of things? Or everything is doomed to failure in the end, and everything is to be wiped out of existence? What is the escape? What is the remedy? What is the means? Was the question of Ashvala, and Yajnavalkya explains that the mortal becomes immortal the moment it returns to its cause. When the senses and the mind and the means of action and the performer himself all get identified in their meditations with the deities from where they come and to which they actually belong and by which they are superintended, when the transcendent divinities, which are the realities behind the various functions and organs of the individual, are meditated upon as organically connected to oneself, then there is an integral relationship established between the individual and the universal. Then the mortal becomes immortal. Otherwise, every action is perishable, and everything that an action brings also would be perishable. So that was the point made out by Yajnavalkya in the context of the question of Ashvala, how a mortal can become immortal in spite of the fact that everything is subject to mortality in this world. Then the next question was about what the Upanishad specifically calls grahas and atigrahas. How the senses are subjected to the influence of objects, so that there is finitude on the part of the subject, which is taken advantage of by every object, and which is also the cause of the attachment of the subject to the object. Every object of sense is an atigraha, and every sense is a graha. That which catches hold of an object is called a graha, and that which intensifies the attachment to the object is the atigraha. So like a crocodile catching hold of a person's legs in a river and not letting him off, the objects catch hold of the senses, which are naturally prone to a movement towards the objects themselves. Is there a way out of this predicament of subjection to utter suffering by way of dependence on objects which are not only perishable in their nature, but also tantalizing in their character? neither do they promise real satisfaction, nor are they in a position to give real satisfaction under any circumstance. So there is a phenomenal attachment of the subject to the object, on account of which there is a mutual destruction brought about by the power of death itself, which cannot be overcome as long as the senses and the mind in their individual capacities remain what they are and depend on the objects of sense which are in space and in time. And they are influenced by the objects so that their attachments get intensified. The only solution, says Yajnavalkya, is the meditation on the transcendent presence which is beyond the realm of both the senses and their objects. Just as death consumes everything, there is nothing which cannot be subject to death in this world. There is something which can swallow death itself, and that has to be meditated upon, the death of death, which is the supreme reality, Brahman. Then we are asked, what are the limits of the worlds? Where do the worlds end? Is there a limit or a consummation for this vast expanse called the universe? Yajnavalkya says there is no end. There are worlds within worlds and worlds beyond worlds. Until we reach the cosmic border itself, which hinges upon the existence of Hiranyagarbha. And the end of the worlds is the existence of the Supreme Being Himself, Hiranyagarbha, the existence. And there is no knowledge of the limits of the worlds as long as we are going to behold them as if they are outside us. The worlds are intertwined with us. We are a part of the world. And the only way of getting into an insight of the vastness of the world as it is an insight into one's own experience, which is inseparable from the objects. The question again is put as to how the internal self can be experienced in its essentiality. Yajnavalkya replies, the internal self cannot be experienced as objects are experienced. It is not an object, because it is an experiencer of things. It is that which sees things, that which hears things, that which understands things. The understander cannot be understood, the seer cannot be seen, the hearer cannot be heard, and the experiencer cannot be experienced. So the difficulty in the knowledge of reality is that it is the subject par excellence of every center of experience. Therefore, your question as to how an experiencer or the real Atman can be experienced is out of point. The Atman cannot be experienced in the ordinary sense of the term, because it is the experiencer himself. You cannot know the Atman as you know things, is the answer of Yajnavalkya. What happens when the experience comes? When the knowledge of the Atman dawns, what is the consequence? That is another question which was posed before Yajnavalkya. The answer is that when knowledge of the Atman arises, desire for things automatically subsides. Just as a person who has woken up from sleep is concerned not with all the gorgeous beauties that he sees in the world and the magnificences which he possessed as his properties. There is an automatic rising above the various attractions of things and the likes and dislikes which are common to the world of experience automatically get transcended because of the fact that the Atman is the self of all. It is the pull of the Atman in the objects that is ultimately responsible for attractions of objects. It is the Atman that is mistaken for objects, and the objects are mistaken for the Atman. When the Atman is mistaken for objects, then there is a transference of qualities taking place between the experiencer and the experienced. It is the presence of the selfhood of things which is responsible ultimately for the mutual connection of the seer and the seen, which fact is missed in the ordinary phenomenal perception. The intervention of space between the seer and the seen defeats the attempt on the part of any person to know the secret that is taking place in the process of perception. We are mistaken when we think that the object of experience is outside us. It is not outside. Because if it is really outside, it would not have been possible to experience it. It is involved in the very process of knowledge. And as the process of knowledge is involved in oneself, the object also is involved in oneself only. So it is the universal interference of things which is ultimately the cause of the experience of even the apparent duality of objects. This is the answer of Yajnavalkya in the context of how the Atman is realized and what follows as a consequence of the knowledge of the Atman. Then Gargi puts the question, what are the limits of things? And where anything is founded, where this world is founded, and where the other world is founded, where the cause is ultimately situated, what is the cause of all causes? Yajnavalkya says, the cause of all things is achara, imperishable, absolute. And under the law of that absolute, everything moves, everything acts, and everything functions. Even the physical harmony, regularity, and system that you observe in nature is due to the existence of this absolute. Its very being is the law of all things. It does not command things by word of mouth. It does not speak as we speak through speech. It exists. Its very existence is an influence exerted inexorably on everything. The symmetrical action and movement of things in every realm of experience, in every level of being, in every plane of existence is due to the operation inwardly, subtly, of the law of the absolute. It is due to that the sun shines, it is due to it the rain falls, it is due to it the earth revolves around the sun, it is due to it that we breathe, it is due to it that we exist and think and are happy. So that is the ultimate reality, and it is not founded upon anything else, everything is founded upon that, says Yajnavalkya in answer to the queries of great sage Gargi. Uddalaka asks, what is Antaryami? What do you mean by the indweller? And where does he indwell? What does he indwell? Where he is the question of Sri Uddalaka. The answer to this question given by Yajnavalkya is that the Antaryami is the Atman and he cannot be known. While he knows everything, he is not known to anybody. The Antaryami is the indwelling principle of all things. That which indwells an object knows the nature of that object, but the object cannot know the indweller at all. Because the indweller is the seeing consciousness, the experiencing reality. It cannot be externalized, it cannot be objectified, it cannot stand in the position of a known. And therefore, its existence is not known. No one can ever have even an inkling of its existence. Because the highest faculty of knowledge, which is our own mind and intellect, cannot reach even the fringe of this reality. the mind and the intellect are thrust outwardly because they are extrovert and they are forced to move in respect of things external to them and they cannot know what is behind them. The mind and the senses and the intellect cannot know what is transcendent to their own existence. So the propeller of even the mind and the intellect, the cause of the functions of even the senses, cannot be known by these faculties. He is the indweller. This indwelling principle is not merely in me or in you, but everything. In physical, in astral and causal being. It is in every level of experience. It is outside, it is inside and it is universal. And therefore, neither the objects outside can know it, nor the inward reality which is the mind and the intellect can know it, nor even the divinities which are apparently the supervising principles over the senses can know. No one can know where it is. And yet, without its existence, nothing can be. Its existence is the existence of everything. Such is what is called the antaryamin. You cannot know him, you cannot see him, you cannot hear him, you cannot think him, you cannot understand him. Because this being is the seer, the hearer, the thinker, the understander and the experiencer of all. He is the sarvanubhuta, the total experiencer of all reality. That was what Yajnavalkya said in answer to Uddalaka's question in regard to antaryamin or the indwelling principle. The last question was by Shakalya, who put various types of queries. Some of them being, how many gods are there, etc. And what are the preceding deities of the various quarters, etc., etc. To which all a proper answer was given by Yajnavalkya, mentioning that there is again a divine principle present in every little bit of thing in this world. There is nothing undivine anywhere. In all the physical objects, in everything that we regard as phenomenal, external, everything that is apparently perishable, destructible, mortal, earthly, in all these things there is a hidden divine principle. On account of the presence of this divinity, it appears to be there. Even appearance could not be if reality were not to be there. So, thus, all the questions put by the eight sages in the court of King Yajnavalkya were answered by Janaka were answered by Yajnavalkya, and finally he himself sums up his discourse by saying that the origin of the human being himself is God. Everything comes from divinity. The individual existence of anything is not brought about by the mixture of elements, as scientists would tell us. It is not a chemical combination that is the cause of the physical body or even the mental functions, because they are inert things. That which is inert, unconscious, cannot produce consciousness. Where from consciousness in the human being comes? It cannot be a conglomeration or a mix-up of physical elements. Because that which is not in the cause cannot be in the effect. If the cause is only hydrogen and oxygen, which is inert in its nature, how would consciousness come out of it? The consciousness which is the effect apparently in the individual has to be traced back to a universal consciousness. Vijnanam anandam brahma radhir dhatuh parayanam. This is what Yajnavalkya concluded in answer to all the queries posed before him. There is one reality behind everything, which appears as the manifold things in this world. Thus, we have the conclusion of the third chapter.